Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Scott Cluthie's Positively Incorrect, live on Blog Talk Radio. The call-in line is 347-308-8478. And now Scott Cluthie and Positively Incorrect. It is live on a Thursday evening across America, around the world, with your host, Scott Cluthie, another edition of Positively Incorrect. And since we're sort of doing some thematics on men and women and myths and truths about their feelings about sex, relationship, and so on, later on I have a repeat of a great show with Harville Hendricks, one of the men who really created models for sustaining relationships long term. That'll be after my wonderful guest in this first half of the show. It's Colin Christopher. Colin, welcome to Positively Incorrect.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And it's great to have your jaw working, apparently, because it's been a bit of a struggle, but we'll talk to Colin about how he used his own hypnosis, perhaps, to overcome any resistance to pain and work and so on, because he is one of the leading experts in the world for the last 14 years. Colin Christopher has been in the front of over 250,000 people throughout North America and shared stages with world-class speakers like Bob Proctor, Steve Seibold, Brian Tracy. He's a sought-after authority on hypnosis, has been a guest expert on radio and TV for shows like ABC, CBS, Fox, and all those. His clients include McDonald's, Bell Mobility, Princess Cruise Lines. That's always a great excuse for work out on a cruise ship. He's a clinical hypnotherapist and also hypnosis instructor and author of the book Success Through Manipulation, Subconscious Reactions That'll Make or Break You, Even If It's Your Dentist. He holds a university degree in genetics as well as a black belt in the art of Wing Chun Kung Fu. And his training lineage, this is kind of cool, can be traced all the way back directly to Yip Man. That is Bruce Lee's master himself. So his early path in hypnosis started in his teens when he was training as a competitive athlete. His coaches used to sort of use some rudimentary forms of hypnosis to help him visualize, focus, and improve his performance. And there it took off from there as he was working to overcome chronic repetitive injury. Of course, the good old doctors told him you could never do that. But, of course, he searched for ways to heal himself. And those doctors, well, you always get two opinions, right, Colin? At least.
Absolutely. Sometimes three or four.
That's right. And when we talk about men and women, there are more than two opinions in the room many times. My mother says, really? I didn't know she was here. Okay. So.
Well, there's the mother's opinion, and then there's the mother-in-law's opinion.
Well, there's always that. We
And then there's yours that doesn't count, right?
Right. We're so glad to have him here. By the way, if you have a question or comment for Colin Christopher this evening, just give us a call. The call-in line is always the same, 347-308-8478 to connect with Positively Incorrect. His website is really his name, Colin Christopher, and that's C-O-L-I-N-1-L, colinchristopher.com. And great deal of material there. You can connect to the book, his work. He does a lot of corporate work. He even does birthdays. Yes, he does birthdays. That's great.
Speaking of, I'm going to my friend's birthday later tonight.
Well, that's just terrific. We're going to talk a little about confessions of a therapist, the truth about men and women. And, you know, one thing that intrigues me, Colin, is, you know, I'm kept looking for the sex therapist part in here. So how does a hypnotherapist become an expert on confessions about the truth about men and women? Tell me more.
It really comes down to just I started seeing couples, like people would see me at a show. Typically, it's the woman who usually came to see me, and then afterwards men came to see me. We started talking about improving sexual performance. It actually really started with, I can't really say his name, but it was actually a good friend of mine. He was having some issues. Just basically performing in the bedroom, and he went to the doctor. Everything was fine. His doctor actually recommended hypnotherapy, and he goes, "Oh, I know a hypnotherapist." And so he came and saw me, and we had a session, and we worked on him and got him going. And then after that, it just sort of started steamrolling. After that, and guys and girls both came to see me.
And so this is sort of your analysis, your understanding, your knowledge base through the people you've worked with. But have you found that to be pretty consistent when you think, when you look out at the general public? Are people's eyes opened when they realize that some of the assumptions that we walk around with, you know, the stories, that's all they are, they're stories. It's not really true about the way relationships are today in 2014.
Yeah, you know, I think relationships have evolved over time. Like I, you know, even from when I was little, you know, watching TV. I mean, TV's a big portrayer of how relationships could be, or how they think they should be, but stuff has really changed over the last, I would say, 10 or 15 years, especially with the advent of modern technology. There's a whole genre of people doing pickup artistry now, and that kind of stuff has changed things
right.
as well in terms of how men and women interact as well.
You know, let's talk a little about the hypnosis part of it. So they come to you for dealing with these issues, and as a hypnotherapist, mm-hmm. you work with them. But, you know, it seems to me, given, I think, all the credentials of hypnosis as a powerful tool, and I use subliminal tapes and all kinds of things like that, some great things that have certainly mm-hmm. worked for me over the years to support my subconscious track, why isn't hypnosis sort of, you know, why isn't it more broadly used? You know what I'm saying? Why? It seems like it should be mm-hmm. more out in the public, don't you?
I agree with you. I think it should be more out in the public too. But I think what's happened is a lot of hypnotherapists, like people can go take like a weekend course or something like that, and suddenly they claim that they're a hypnotherapist.
Yeah.
There's people, like you can go on the internet and you can print out a thing that says you're a doctor in hypnosis. See, there's no such thing as a doctor in hypnosis, as far as I know, to the best of my research. But there are doctors, like psychologists, medical doctors, that see people that actually know hypnosis very well and actually help them. So I think there's a little bit of, number one, there's a disconnect in terms of credibility for people. Number two,
yeah.
I think there's also the misconceptions about hypnosis, where people think that they lose all control, or the hypnotist is going to dominate them, or, you know, there's the ticking wristwatch clock and all that kind of stuff. All the different misconceptions that are out there, I think that scares people from really knowing what hypnosis is, or finding out what hypnosis is about and taking advantage of it.
What is the mechanism, Colin Christopher, that keeps us from really going outside our moral values and the things that who we truly are when we're under hypnosis, which, you know, hypnotherapists and professional hypnotists say you can't really be made to do something, you know, you don't agree with. What is that mechanism?
I think that really goes down into a person's their core beliefs and their core values. Under hypnosis, it's not that your brain or your mind has been completely dominated. It's more that your mind is focused on specific things, like, say, for example, you want to lose weight. You're focusing your mind on, you know, eating healthy foods, exercising more, and then, you know, making healthy food choices. So that stuff doesn't interfere with your core base values. And I think that's really one of the biggest misperceptions about hypnosis, is people think that they're going to be able to remove their core values. These things have been programmed into you for your entire life, from when you were born all the way up to the point in time that you're seeing the hypnotherapist. So they're important to you, and because they're important to you, you're not going to break them.
Well, let's take a look then at the issue of sexual relationships. Let's say a couple has been married for a number of years. Maybe they say, well, the spark is gone, or he doesn't have an interest in me anymore, and he says, well, she doesn't really act sexy for me anymore, whatever. What are you actually driving toward? What are you looking for? What do you look for to start sort of your base material? And then how does hypnosis work to help them become sort of clear about the issues that maybe the real issues, or how does it work?
Well, essentially I take a look at, like, what they're typically, I do a little background and see, you know, what is it that they're doing within their relationship? Are they, is there an emotional connection still? Are they still treating each other with respect? And what is it they're focusing on? Are they focusing on, okay, we've got, you know, we've got two or three kids and we've got to go do, you know, soccer on Monday, karate on Tuesday, you know, whatever, every night of the week, there's a different activity that, you know, gets done. They work all day, they're tired, they haven't taken any time for themselves. So I really take a look at what it is that they're focusing on as a couple and individually that fosters the negative relationship or that spark that disappears. And then I get them to, you know, think about things like one of my favorite things that I like to get them to do is to sort of write a letter to their partner. Like the handwriting is much better than like doing a text message or, you know, an email or anything like that. So you get the, you get on that emotional level and you get a nice piece of paper, a nice pen in your partner's favorite ink. So that ink color, so that their favorite color resonates with them and goes into their subconscious, and tell your partner how much they mean to you, how you can't imagine their life without them, all the qualities that you find sexy about them, or that turn you on, or that you appreciate. Because a lot of times when that separation comes, they're busy focusing on all the things that they dislike about their partner, you know, the nagging stuff or, you know, how they chew their cereal in the morning, that kind of stuff. And that takes away it takes away from their emotional connection. So it's about reestablishing that emotional connection so they become excited by each other again. And then, we go into the hypnosis to just – once we've got them focused – then we go into the hypnosis and just get them to start thinking and programming them to think about the things that they like about each other. That's one of the techniques.
My guest, Colin Christopher, and the website is colinchristopher.com. Check it out for yourself. And his book and his work is all there. There's a tremendous amount of information. There's TV shows he's appeared on, and you can download, I think, 4 or 5 chapters from the book as well, right, Colin? Free?
You can download 5 free chapters of the book and check it out. And I like to say, try before you buy.
There you go. Very good. Do you do, or is it possible, because I hadn't thought about this before, because I've worked with so many intuitives over the last 3 decades and so on, but do you do hypnosis over the phone, that kind of thing, distant hypnotic work?
I do see, because I travel a lot, so where possible. I can't do everything over the phone, like in some cases, depending on the situation, I actually need to see the person. But typically for the standard quitting smoking, weight loss stuff, it's pretty easy to do over the phone. When we start going into things like fears and phobias, those kinds of things, I really need to see the person, because if they have like some kind of emotional reaction where, if they go into a panic attack or something like that, and I can't see that over the phone. Most of the time you can't hear it, so I don't do that over the phone.
I see.
But I evaluate that on a case-by-case basis.
Well, I was thinking someone would hear the show and they're having problems in their relationship, you know, they'd really like to get the spark back, or they're wondering where it went or whatever. Yeah, it's not always convenient today just to jump up and go somewhere, but if they can connect with you, reach out and create a relationship with you, that would be tremendous that way. You know, because
absolutely.
Yeah.
For something like this, for sexual relationships with, you know, your partner and those kinds of things, it's actually quite easy for me to do over the phone.
What have you seen in the changes in sexual relationships, maybe our attitudes toward them? And of course, with so many people now not being married, quote unquote, but committed or with their significant other or something, the cohabitation rules have changed dynamically in the last 10 years, really a big increase, especially with younger generations and the way they view the matrimonial model, if you will. Has that changed the issues that walk into your office?
I think in terms of commitment, not really. Like if somebody's committed, whether they're married or not, they're committed to their partner, that doesn't really change. I see, one of the things that has changed a lot over the last probably 15 years is typically women, they're making a lot more money, they have better jobs, in a lot of cases they have more money than their male counterparts. So there sometimes is a little bit of friction between the man and the woman, because for a lot of men, they actually, you know, they enjoy their partner making a lot of money, they like smart, intelligent women. But for the guys who are sort of stuck a little bit in the past, they feel like they're not the breadwinner. They feel like they're letting either their family or their partner down by not being the person that's at the forefront of the relationship when it comes to bringing in money. So sometimes that kind of self-esteem and those kinds of issues certainly do come up. And in those cases, it's always, you know, getting them to refocus on the fact that, you know what, you've got these two incomes, you've got more disposable income to do things with, you can go on more vacations, all the positive things that come from having somebody who can actually bring a financial benefit to the relationship.
Well, and also, for me, that speaks to separating yourself from the judgment of society, whatever that is, and the individualization of yourself and valuing yourself and your partner and your relationship above all else, and not worrying about what the so-called mores of society are, because half the time the people who are suggesting these are out doing things that they really don't want you to know about anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, society in the past, as I said, that, you know, men have to be this big tough guy takes care of the family and does all these things. But, you know, that is really changing where, you know, we're realizing men in general, you know, it's been detrimental to men for having to suppress emotions, suppress their feelings. Like we've been told since we were little. I mean, I was told when I was little, you know, you don't cry, you're a guy, and those kinds of things. So it makes it harder on male self-confidence, especially now that, you know, women are coming to the forefront, being treated as equals, and rightly so. That makes it difficult because, you know, from birth, we're not really treated as equals. We're sort of brought up a little bit differently. So it's, you know, finding ways to live within that structure, realizing that the societal structure is not necessarily the best thing, and evolving forward from there.
You know, if we watch the media all the time, again, we're given the idea that men just obsess about sex and the story that, 4 seconds a man has a sexual thought. I was like, are you kidding me? We've got time for that.
Yeah.
You know, what's the truth?
Yeah, it's a lot of, sex there.
Bunch of baloney. What's the truth about what you've discovered, at least in your world, about men's obsession or lack about sex?
You know what? I have found that men they don't want to have sex as much as, you know, or at least in my experience, as much as everybody else seems to portray them and having, you're right, that thought of every 4 seconds or 8 seconds or whatever that statistic is that they tested. It's not so much that, but women actually, they want to have sex just as much as men. They want to have enjoyable sex, especially as you go into the younger generation. They've sort of experienced more in terms of, they haven't had those stereotypes ingrained upon them in the same way, shape, or form. Women seem to be treated much more as sexual equals or sexual beings, and that's, you know, that's really freeing them. So it's not something that they want to have every day. I think the average couple, I was just reading some statistics, I think it was on Match.com, I think it's only 15% of women and 12% of men want to have, 15% of men and 12% of women want to have sex every day. So it's not something that's actually true that they want to do it all the time. They want to have that quality time.
Well, let's talk about some of these other topics you weigh in on, particularly when it comes to women and their weight and clothes and how do they look. And, you know, that's the dreaded, you know, oh, hey, honey, how do I look? You know, and the average male is frightened to say anything except, yeah, it looks fantastic, but that's not the truth of what women want to hear, is it?
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, typically, especially nowadays, especially with, you know, women in their, you know, under 30 range, they want the truth. They want to be treated as equal. They want that respect. And it's not that women over 30 don't want that, I find. It's just that they're used to a different way of upbringing, where it used to be, you know, men just complimented women and just said things. So they expected it a man to sort of lie a little bit or just tell them they always look good. But typically they want the honesty now. I mean, they don't want you to be brutal about it, because if you're just going to say, you know, baby, you look fat, that's not going to work. But they do want you to say, you know what, maybe it's time for us to go to the gym or do something together so that we can you know, be a little bit more healthy, be a little bit more fit if that's happening for them.
How would you suggest that listeners might use hypnotherapy, especially in regards to their relationship? Do you have certain tapes, you know, programmable tapes for self-hypnosis, Or how do you suggest people say, you know, well, honey, I never thought of that. I heard this on Scott's show. Maybe we could try hypnosis. How do they go about getting that done?
Well, I don't have anything specifically for relationships. I do have stuff for individuals. Typically, the first thing, if there's relationship issues, I always tell people to look at your own self-confidence issue, especially if there's things like cheating or anything else like that going on. Typically, cheating happens because of self-confidence issues. Not always, but most of the time, one or both of the partners doesn't feel worthy of the other partner. And so that creates chaos. So I recommend using hypnotherapy to improve their self-confidence so they feel good. Also, a lot of times, like, when people are really stressed, you know, you've got work every day, kids, and everything else that's going on, bills to pay, everything like that. When you're really, really stressed, that takes a toll on the relationship. So I use hypnosis to actually help people to relax so that they get rid of their stress and they can feel calmer. And when they're calmer, they can focus on other things that are better for their relationship and build on their emotional connections and build some romance. So those are the things I'd recommend, using hypnosis for increasing self-confidence and then helping you to reduce stress and relax.
Now, you're the author of Success Through Manipulation, which sounds a little sinister. But tell us what that title really means, Colin, and what you're talking about.
Well, essentially, the book is meant to test how you react and think right from the moment you hear the title. So manipulation, you know, a lot of people perceive it as bad, but it's really not good or bad. It's the belief that they have that's positive or negative. For example, when you're driving a car, you manipulate a steering wheel, but when you manipulate bad, you crash. When you manipulate like a race car driver, you win the Indy 500. So the book gives you the tools to see the biases, the preconceptions, and the negative thinking that you're having and how to identify it and change your reactions so that you can be more successful.
And how much of this is also in training yourself on those visual or verbal clues that people send off or that you may or may not be sending out? What are some of the faux-pas that we create that we should be conscious of or cognizant of before, especially when we go into a big meeting or any kind of, you know, charged environment?
Yeah, a lot of times, like when you go to a meeting, I see this all the time, where when you're meeting people, when people are nervous or their confidence is low, they tend to cross their legs and or their arms, usually a lot of times their arms. So what that does is it creates the subconscious appearance that you're nervous, that you're closed off, that you're unapproachable. Mm-hmm. So what I recommend people doing for something like that is, even if you're feeling nervous, just stand straight or sit straight, depending on what the situation is. Uncross your arms, uncross your legs. When you're speaking with people, lean forward so that it seems like you're interested in what they're saying, even if you're not. When you sit back and you lean back, you have that approach of like you're being arrogant. You're disconnected with the people that are talking to you. So those kinds of things, like just your body language in general, can by altering that just minorly, can increase how you interact and have a better relationship with the people that you're meeting or going into a meeting with or whatever it is that you're doing.
My guest is Colin Christopher, and the website is Colin Christopher. That's Colin with one L. You can find his book there, videos. He has a ColinOnTV.com website with his TV shows and all that good stuff. And lots of great information here. And, of course, he can come to your event. He can do work with you as a couple, whatever it might be. And now that his jaw is feeling better, and we're all happy for that. So
I don't think we told everybody, but I actually had jaw surgery 2 weeks ago, so I think we should let people know that my jaw is feeling better.
He's still talking, folks. He's talking. He's doing a great job here. He's just yakking away. Mm-hmm. So he's come through it all. So I'm very, very proud of you. So how did you overcome? How did you actually learn to overcome some of the repetitive injuries you were having to sort of tell, you know, overcome what the doctor said you couldn't do?
Yeah, I had I used to be a competitive swimmer when I was younger, and I was I'd gotten tendonitis. I dislocated each of my shoulders. One was five times, the other one was six. I can't remember which one's which anymore. But I was sort of a mess and falling apart. The doctors were telling me I needed surgery to get everything corrected, and it would just be difficult for movement and those kinds of things. So what I ended up doing, it was through the course of the actual hypnosis training, there's one course that we do hypnosis to alleviate injuries and to work on pain. Like, it's, one of the things we do is actually using hypnosis for childbirth and those kinds of things. Obviously, I didn't have to give birth to a child, but my shoulders are having a problem. So we did some various techniques to alleviate and get rid of the pain and just allow my body to naturally heal itself. I mean, it didn't happen overnight. It certainly took, I think with all the techniques that we were doing, it took about somewhere between about 14 and 16 months. I can't remember the exact timeline, but we did it, and I've been much better ever since.
Well, good for you. Good for you. I want you to take a minute or two, just tell people about some of the things that they can participate in the world of Colin Christopher, because your work is changing lives, and it's around important issues for people, not things they want to talk about publicly, but that are, you know, primary in their private lives so often, whether it's weight loss, smoking, success, overcoming the fear of confrontation, whatever it is. What are some of the tools and assets you have out there, for Colin, for people?
Yeah, we've got quite a few, actually. I mean, number one is the book, and you, like as we said, you can download 5 free chapters and check it out and see if it's right for you on my website, colinchristopher.com. I've also got a Losing Weight for Free program. There's a link to it on my website, but it's also free lose weight. Hypnosis.com, and that's for people like we look at like there's sort of like an obesity epidemic is what we're calling it in the media right now, where it's about between 60% and 70% of people are overweight, and I just put together a program to just help people lose weight just free, because it's just something, you know, I really strongly believe in that physical fitness is something that you know, everybody should be part of, and having a healthy lifestyle. It reduces risks of like diabetes, cancer, all those other things that are linked with obesity. Actually, if you're interested in becoming a stage hypnotist, I've got a little course called Free Stage. I can't remember the website. There's a link to it. It's freehypnosiscourse.com, I think it is. I have to take a look at it. I should know this one off the top of my head. But there's a link to it on Colin Christopher. So if you're interested in
get over there to colinchristopher.com.
Yeah, there's all the links are right there. But those are the good things. And if you want to check out the TV interviews that I've done, yeah, Colin on TV is a good spot for it as well.
I think I wore your jaw out. Is what happened? It's like, can't wait till this is over so I can sit down. I know that's a lot. Well, I'm going to let you go so you can rest up, sir. You've got a lot of important work to do out in the world, okay?
Thanks very much. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. It was a great show. It's great to connect with you. And when you get that jaw healed up, we'll have you back, and we'll talk about success through manipulation. And that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So,
my pleasure.
All right. You take care. Be kind. And I think, you know, a little brandy in milk, I hear, is really good for the sore jaw.
No time for the milk, just straight to the brandy.
That's it, my friend. Make the ice cubes out of it, too. All right. Have a great evening. Colin Christopher, thanks for being on Positively Incorrect.
Thank you very much, Scott. Have a great night.
And by the way, join me Tuesday night. What a great show. Diane Collins, Do You Quantum Think? New thinking that will rock your world. Her new book, she'll be on with me for a full hour. That's this coming Tuesday. Right here on Positively Incorrect with your host, Scott Cluthie. Stay with me, Harville Hendricks. Yes, the true icon of relationships that work long term. Coming up next, right after these reminders about Positively Incorrect and the people who sponsor us. You're listening to Scott Cluthie's Positively Incorrect Radio. Join the newsletter at scottcluthie.com and on Facebook at Scott Cluthie's Positively Incorrect TV and Radio. Want to talk to tonight's guests? Call in at 347-308-8478. We'll be right back.
Soul Growth, MuseList.org. Free classified ads for the spiritually aware. Follow the changing world of spirit and share your own wisdom, goods, and services absolutely free. Receive the Muse-letter with our nearly 100,000 readers. Also visit soulgrowth.org, the online portal for all spiritual paths, where you can help others while helping yourself at no cost as a Soul Growth mentor. Come on, jump in the water. It feels good. Booking your vacation can be easy, but more importantly, fun. There's no need to stress about booking your vacation. That's why we're here. Phaseway Travel, 1-800-783-7047. And of course, you're going on a vacation to get away from the stress, right? Leave your world behind and go have some fun. Whether you want to go on a cruise or explore the lands on an escorted tour, we are here to help. You're never more than a click or call away. Book your vacay with Faye. Call 1-800-783-7047 and get away today. Phaseway Travel.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Scott Cluthie's Positively Incorrect, live on Blog Talk Radio. The call-in line is 347-308-8478. And now Scott Cluthie and Positively Incorrect. Live on a Thursday evening across America and around the world, time for another edition of Positively Incorrect. And, you know, this is not a trick question or statement. We're going to be talking about making marriage simple. That's great. And I have one of the true icons of the Western culture, in my opinion, on making relationships work. He's half of a greater whole, and he is all complete within himself. It is Harville Hendricks. Dr. Hendricks, welcome to Positively Incorrect.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this conversation. And if we are lucky, your partner in The Right Kinds of Crime, Helen LaKelly Hunt, Dr. Hunt, will be joining us as well, the co-author and co-creator of the Imago work and so much more with Harville Hendricks, and a great partner for you for many years as well. Hopefully. We'll see if Helen shows up or not.
Hope so.
Absolutely. For those who don't know, Harville Hendricks is author of Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples, and he may not remember, but I interviewed him a long time ago on that, and has more 40 years of experience as a clinical pastoral counselor, therapist, educator, clinical trainer, and public speaker. And he's appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show, something I've never done. Helen LaKelly Hunt was elected to the Women's Hall of Fame for her work in women's philanthropy, and Harville and Helen co-created Imago Relationship Therapy, very powerful stuff, founders of Imago Relationships International, Inc., and they have 6 kids, 5 grandchildren, and they've never had a fight. Well, okay, I'm a liar sometimes. But what's really great, and what's great, is that Harville and Helen have brought forward Making Marriage Simple, 10 Truths for Changing the Relationship You Have into the One You Want. And this is both a distillation and an updating of the great work that Harville and Helen have been doing for decades. So, Harville, welcome very much to the show.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here and looking forward to the conversation.
And I tell you, listeners, you know, you're out there, you know, you're walking around with your little iPhones, whatever it is you're doing. And you might be in your underwear for all I know. But I do love questions and comments. Not that any of you ever have any problems in relationships like me or Harville. Yours is perfectly fine. Well, maybe that's the one you just left. I don't know. But the call-in line is here, and we'd love your questions and comments, as always. 347-308-8478. That's 347-308-8478. Making Marriage Simple, 10 Truths for Changing the Relationship You Have into the One You Want, just released about 2 months ago, and it's great to have Harville Hendricks here. We do hope his life partner, Helen LaKelly Hunt, joins us as well, but we'll see about that. And of course,
I'm here.
Helen,
hi there.
Thank you, Helen. I couldn't bear the thought of two men discussing relationship marriage for an hour. That's just overwhelming for me.
That's very intuitively said.
See, I'm being a good boy. I'm sort of a cross between a hailstorm and a turtle. Actually, I'm kind of a hurdle. I think they call me a hurdle.
That's a new one. We'll pick that up, put it in our
I'm a synthesizer. So,
you're a
Helen, tell me all the stuff that Harville screws up daily. No, I'm just kidding. This is great because you've taken your Imago therapy, you've taken all the lessons you've learned, you've really reinvented a lot of it. But the thing is, the ground you've built on is the ground that I endorse so strongly for making relationships work. We want to talk about marriage. And I'll tell you, I don't know, Helen, but in this culture, I'm wondering, you know, I know what the answer is, but I know that committed partnerships, even if they don't want to put the justice of the peace on it, can take the work that you guys are bringing out and make it work as though, as if, and not as if like fantasy, as if a marriage that works as well, making marriage simple. Is that so?
Absolutely. Everybody is longing to have one person in the world who they can trust, who they can tell their story to, and who they feel has their back. And it's a skill set learning to stay in a relationship with that one person you're really drawn to. And yes, it doesn't need a legal contract, and it applies to everybody.
Right on. And now, just as so our listeners know, we are not talking about Peter Pan and Wendy here when we talk about the long-term relationship and marriage of Helen and Harville. They both come from the great land of divorce, don't you, Harville?
Yes, we both do.
But that's a horizon that's gratefully going way far away into the distant memory.
And, yes.
But the truth is, Helen, the horizon of divorce seems to be as healthy and boisterous as ever. And it's even for me, I've been doing this 35, I don't know, too many years. But it seems, how can it be with all the Oprahs, with all the Imago, with all the books, the seminars, the tapes, the John Grays, everything saturated on relationships, that we're sitting here at the precipice of the same old story?
Right. It's poignant because people quit just as it gets exciting. And one reason I think they quit is there's a myth in the culture that if you're struggling in your relationship, it means you're married to the wrong person. Harville and I feel like that actually when you're struggling in your relationship, it means growth is trying to happen. Something new is trying to get born, and maybe God's trying to show up, and so watch out and pay attention and see what happens.
Yeah, and I think to add to that, I think that's the way it works at a personal level. At a social level, I think that Helen and I and other relationship researchers and experts are aware and believe that one of the reasons for divorce is that the form of marriage is changing. The spirit of marriage is not changing, but you know, because people are living together, that is the cohabitation rates now are higher.
Yes, yes.
And marriage rates, but that doesn't mean people aren't falling in love and moving in together. So what's happened is that the form of marriage, which has been what Helen would call the dominator subordinate marriage, the vertical marriage where Anna has been in charge, that form of marriage is no longer viable. It no longer works. And so that form is breaking down, and the divorce is an indicator that marriage is going through a transition of form. And at the same time, a new form of marriage is emerging, and Helen and I labeled that. There are other labels that other people have. We label it the conscious partnership, in which this verticality, where one person is over another, is not there, but you have a horizontal plane where both partners are relating to each other, you know, on equal grounds. And this equality or egalitarian marriage, where the marriage is focused on the relationship, is replacing a preceding marriage, which was focused also on personal need satisfaction. So the whole quality and paradigm of marriage is changing.
You're listening to the voice of Harville Hendricks with his wife and life partner, Helen LaKelly Hunt, and co-authors of the new book, Making Marriage Simple, based on decades of their work, their seminars, their personal trials and tribulations, Imago Therapy, which they created, 10 Truths for Changing the Relationship You Have into the One You Want. And Harville, you were talking about something, Helen, I'd like you to address. And I was fortunate in my former marriage to have a partner who taught me something that has stayed with me that I see as a keynote to a successful relationship no matter what. And you talked about it, and I think this is really, really important for people to get. If they can't remember any of these rules, if they don't think about the exercises we might talk about, that this one thing, that there's you, there's the other, and then there's the relationship, and the relationship is a third entity. It's a being of itself. And you need to nurture that rather than worrying about you or even directing at your partner, but by nurturing that, the relationship as the third party, if you will, then these needs get met. The unexpressed gets expressed. The emotions, the waves aren't so strong. It really differentiates. And I'm doing an ineloquent job of expressing that. But, Helen, do you agree, and would you talk about that?
Well, the insight here is correlated to the idea of looking through a telescope and you see one planet and then you move the telescope and there's another planet nearby. So you're looking at two planets and then it looks like there's space between them, like empty space. But in fact, the quote, empty space between them is filled with all sorts of gravitational pulls and you know, the space between them actually holds up the planet. I mean, it's not empty space. It's space that's really alive. And that's a metaphor for two people. And we focus on the people need to grow and change. But what really needs to happen is that space between them needs to get cultivated to hold up the planets, to hold the two people together. And What erodes the space between the relationship, or whatever you call it, we sometimes call it the sacred space between two
Good.
People. But what erodes the space between is anxiety. If people get scared of each other, and they get scared when they put each other down. So once there's anxiety or put downs in the relationship, the space between gets toxic. And it gets poison, yes.
Yeah.
And so we have a real focus on making sure the space between two people stays safe for the two people to exist. So the book really teaches people how they can say what they want to say, but not in a way that raises anxiety in their partner. And that's a way that two people can be different, but also stay connected.
Yeah, and Harville, As you both point out in the book, that toxicity in communication or lack thereof, withholding is also a big part of that, isn't it?
Yeah, withholding. There's a whole range of toxicities. We call it, by a generic term, negativity. Anything that makes the partner feel unsafe is a negativity, whether it's withholding and not interacting when you should be, or interacting in ways that cause the partner, you know, to feel frightened or uncomfortable in some way, feeling put down. I think the primary word is that negativity is any form of put down, whether it's mild to severe. So withholding can be as powerful as aggression in creating a lack of safety in a relationship. So when I love the way that you framed that. You said you didn't think you were doing it good. I thought it was an elegant statement that the relationship is a third entity, has a life of its own. And that the interesting paradox about that entity feeds the two individuals.
Yeah.
But if it's not taken care of, the entity suffers, and when it suffers, the two individuals suffer. So that's the new marriage that's coming into being, I think. There's that idea is finally getting some traction in the culture that the best way to be happy in your marriage is to make sure the relationship is free of toxicity or negativity.
And that's real work. You know, that's where the notion, romantic love is great. Romantic love is the fuel, the jet propeller, the fireworks that sets off the dynamics, that draws you together in an exorbitable way. But also romantic love is a lie in a lot of ways. Helen, tell us why.
Well, we think this person we fall in love with is looking at us so adoringly that it means that they want to meet our needs all the time. So we go, hooray, I'm going to marry this person because they're going to meet my needs.
Yeah.
Both people are saying that. And there's a little
saying, and I want to meet theirs.
No. But they're both
saying,
take
care of my needs and we'll both be happy.
Right.
So they're both saying, oh, you and I are one. And under their breath, they're saying, but I'm the one. So
the one.
And you know what? It happens in every single relationship. Everybody feels that way. So I think when I met Harville, he had outlined phases of, I met him like 35 years ago, and I went to his first public lecture way back then, and he had stages of relationship that there's a romantic phase, and inevitably romance becomes disillusionment. And people move into the power struggle, and it happens in every single relationship. And that's then where the real fun begins. You can either give up in the power struggle, or you can learn the work of real love. And
that's why, Harville, we see serial divorcers. So you see people that have been married and divorced 2, 3, 4, 5 times, because when they hit the wall, which is your job, is to go over the wall, around the wall, or through the wall, they instead turn their back on the wall and look for the next romantic discharge.
Exactly. Yeah. And it inevitably is the case that the issue that helped made you hit the wall is the issue that would require you to change the most in yourself, but you don't want to change it. And sometimes you don't even know you've got the issue. You think the issue is carried by the person you're with. When you take your walk, you think you're leaving the issue, not knowing that you're walking away with this issue around you. I remember Eric Byrne had this marvelous graphic image about people coming to therapy with a pig tied around their neck. But they didn't know that they had a pig tied around their neck. But they'd come talking about, you know, how they had this feeling that something was wrong, that there was and they wanted to go into a real analysis about it all. And Eric said, well, you know, all we got to do is, did you know there's a pig tied around your neck? So, no, there's no pig tied around. Yeah, there's, he looked at, oh, my God, there's a pig tied around my neck. So why don't we just cut the rope and you'll be fine. So
it's simple. You can go through the pain of trying to figure it out, or you could release the pig.
That's right. Just release the pig.
Oink, oink.
You know, the real problem is when a person like me, I didn't know I was being negative to Harville. I didn't know I was raising anxiety in him. But what I had a zeal for was pointing out things that if Harville did them, he would be a finer person.
I
sort of thought I was helping him, wardrobe improvement. I helped him, figure out how to organize his day better. Plus, if his social skills were not great one evening, well, I would spend 20 minutes pointing out ways he could have.
Oh, how nice of you, Helen.
Just, and I wasn't even going to charge him any money. I just, for free.
Wow.
I know.
With you.
You and I, see it the same way, but Harville did not see it that way. He seems to.
Really?
His favorite song is a Western song called Don't Fence Me In, and he likes his independence, but I thought he would feel so great if he had a buddy trying to help him with his life, but.
Fixing it.
Sort of fixing it.
You could just tell him what he's going to eat for dinner and what he's going to do this weekend, and he could just say, oh, that's wonderful. You've handled everything for me, darling. Thank you.
Exactly. I paid so much attention to him, I thought I knew everything before he even told me. So I didn't need to ask. because I could imagine.
What's the use of even asking him since you already know everything about him?
Right. And so that was just annihilating of him, which I didn't realize. And so that was a real wake-up call for me when I had this miserable person married to me who much rather watched Star Trek on TV than think about going to a movie or dinner with me out in the town.
When
so
it came down to it, yes.
Yeah.
And in fact, you could put on seminars and smile and grin and take the money and slap the couples on the butt and go home and argue.
Oh,
exactly.
Yes, we were real good at that.
And we did, yeah.
And so what we did one day when we realized that negativity was really much more present in our life than either of us realized, because we both thought constructive criticism like was helping, we decided to think about that a lot. And the definition of negativity is if your partner experiences something as negative. We can think we're saying a joke or making light of a situation or something, but we suggest that two people make a commitment to zero negativity, and that if one of you feels your partner's being negative, you just say, ouch, and send a little notice to resend the message in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Elephant's a popular word, too. Elephant.
Oh.
Remember that one? Elephant.
Oh, good. That's a great thought. Yes.
In the room.
Right.
Elephant, yes. Elephant in the room, right.
Yeah. Now, Helen, you're a hailstorm, and Harville, you're a turtle. So tell us about turtles and hailstorms, Harville.
Well, those are sort of popular terms for another layer of words called minimizers and maximizers.
Okay.
And those are terms that describe the two sides of the central nervous system, which is the sympathetic and parasympathetic. Sympathetic is the arousal, and parasympathetic is the quiet side of the nervous system. So what we've learned about those words refer to some people who are to deal with their anxiety by escalating. That is, they make a lot of noise, they talk a lot, they initiate, they are emotional, and then the other person is a turtle, and that means their sympathetic nervous system is on overload. And the turtle is the person who deals with anxiety by going inside the shell, if possible, shutting the door, and then taking the whole thing underground if they need to. It's like the guy who goes to the garage, closes the door and works on his car or whatever.
The cave.
To the cave. So this turtle and hailstorm dynamic is also a dynamic in every couple. It's what we call complementarity, or the tension of the opposites. Every couple is made up of one person who escalates, although they could go quiet, but they're married to somebody who is usually quiet, although they could escalate. And sometimes they do that. But the pattern they learned in childhood is to handle stress or anxiety by shutting down or by opening up and becoming aggressive. The amazing thing about these two is that they marry each other, that two hailstorms never marry, two turtles never marry. And you could be a hailstorm in one relationship, and then you get out of it and go to the next relationship and say, well, you know, I'm going to be more contained in this relationship. Your partner then will become the hailstorm. So that dynamic seems to belong to every relationship. And so part of the work that couples have to do is learn how to deal with those two extremes so that both move toward the middle. But it's a very, very interesting thing and very predictable. In fact, it's so obvious that now when Helen and I are at workshops, we can sort of look out at the crowd, at the couples that are there, and sometimes they're 50 to 100 couples. And you can walk around and look at them and tell which one's a turtle, which one's a hailstorm, just by looking at them.
That's the intuition, isn't it, Helen, going off?
And one thing, the turtle will always kind of look away when you look at them, and the hailstorm will sort of look back at you.
They'll start a conversation.
What are you looking at? What are you looking at, buddy?
What
are you
looking at? Yes.
Is my hair not right?
Yes. And the turtle, if you speak to the turtle, they'll look up like, you talking to me?
Me? I'm just here. She brought me.
And she brought me. Exactly. Yeah.
Make MakingMarriageSimple.com, by the way, is the website for the new book, Making Marriage Simple, 10 Truths for Changing the Relationship You Have into the One You Want, co-authored with Helen LaKelly Hunt and Harville Hendricks, my wonderful guest tonight. And if you have a question or comment, don't be afraid. I don't bite. It's 347-308-8478. Now, Helen, do you have something else to add there?
Well, the thing I would add is that I learned pretty early that what Harville least liked to hear from me was the question, honey, can we talk?
Ooh.
So the hailstorm is always sort of eager to talk about things, especially the relationship, and a turtle really gets afraid when the...
Whoops. Hello, you two. I just lost my connection to them. I think somebody hit the mute button on their end, and they may not know it. Here on Positively Indirect Radio with your host, Scott Cluthy, and the sound of one hand clapping. So the Hendricks, the Harville Hendricks and Helen LaKelly Hunt, I know you're there. You're still on the line. I don't know where you went. And I hope it's not Blog Talk Radio again on a Thursday night like they did to me 2 months ago, getting oversaturated and blaming it on everything except their system. Are you there? Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, because I don't think they know. I'm going to disconnect them.
Well, so many couples.
There
and
you are. Do you know, Helen, we didn't hear you for about 2 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm serious. So let's backtrack a little to the whole piece about the turtle avoiding and being afraid when the hailstorm says, can we talk?
Right, and when Harville would withdraw, I used to feel that I should amplify my request to talk.
And
if he went into a shell, you know, knock politely on the shell, and if he didn't answer, maybe knock more vociferously. And that is the wrong tactic. If your turtle is needing space, if your turtle needs time alone, I learned it's essential to give them their space. And they are so grateful if you do that, then eventually when they want to come out and talk, they're a transformed person.
Yeah, and as
they've got to work it out in themselves. They've got to get their inner dialogue right so they're appropriate when they do communicate. Is that right, Harville?
Yes. A couple of things to say here is that the turtle responds, is kind of afraid of the frequency of the of saying I want to talk or can we talk, the initiation frequency, and also with the intensity. And what the turtle doesn't know is that the turtle is actually regulating and stimulating the hailstorm's frequency by their not being there, by their absence, their emotional absence. And they're also regulating the intensity by being so withdrawn. So what has to happen in order for that balance to occur is that both the turtle and the hailstorm have to learn how to not scare each other. Because a turtle triggers the hailstorm's anxiety by withdrawal, and the hailstorm triggers the turtle's anxiety by assertion. But if the turtle will say, honey, is there anything I can do for you? Or, I'm finished working on the car, or I'm finished doing whatever, and now I'm really available. Would you like to take a walk? That hailstorm will just kind of calm down. And sometimes when you first start doing that, they'll say, what are you on?
What are you trying to pull?
What are you trying to pull? What do you have in mind? you get kind of suspicious when people change their behavior patterns. But if the turtle will initiate, the hailstorm will calm down, and if the hailstorm will calm down a bit, the turtle will initiate. So couples have to get into that pattern by which both are willing to walk into the middle.
Yes. I don't want to make an assumption here, Helen. So is this tend to, in your experience of you and Harville with thousands of people, does it tend to fall in a in a gender specific way, or is it totally mutually exclusive?
We suggest people don't think of it as gendered, because it's not 100%. And the important thing around this is to recognize if ever you see your partner really withdraw, don't escalate. Or if you see your partner escalate, don't step away at that time. Your partner's needing to be mirrored, or they're needing a gentle word from you. That it's sort of a way to modulate your relationship.
And it is putting yourself in the other person's shoes as well. And that's part of that thing about the third entity, the relationship.
Yeah.
Excellent point.
Right. You reach across the space. And it's amazing what magic the words, well, let me see if I'm getting you right, dear, does for the hailstorm. Because then they got your interest and their attention. And they may then really say a lot more things. Sometimes it feels like a water hose. But if you'll keep mirroring, then it will really slow down and calm down. Because what you're doing is triggering each other's anxiety and then regulating each other's anxiety by showing up in the space between. So it's really important that couples know about that, and also that they learn how to talk about it in a way that doesn't trigger the anxiety, which is, you know, to mirror each other back, to listen deeply, to express empathy like you're talking about. And so we teach couples the dialogue process, so that they know how to do that in a sort of structured way. You got to keep the relationship safe.
Yeah, it's got to be a safe space or all hell will break loose, as they say. We're going to take a break. Remind you, I'm talking with the wonderful, gifted couple committed to your relationship working, Helen LaKelly Hunt and Harville Hendricks. Great honor to have them both on tonight. The new book, Making Marriage Simple, there's also a website, makingmarriagesimple.com. We're going to talk about some of the great tools and assets that are available to you there, 10 truths for changing the relationship you have into the one you want. So, Helen and Harville, you can talk amongst yourselves for the next 3 minutes, and we'll be looking forward to coming back on the other side with Positively Incorrect, okay?
Okay.
Perfect.
Thanks.
Thank you. Listeners, stay with us. We'll be right back to remind you about the great companies that make this show possible.
You're listening to Positively Incorrect with your host, Scott Kluthe, on Blog Talk Radio. The call-in line is 347-308-8478. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Come on. Jump in the water. It feels good. Booking your vacation can be easy, but more importantly, fun. There's no need to stress about booking your vacation. That's why we're here. Phaseway Travel. 1-800-783-7047. And of course, you're going on a vacation to get away from the stress, right? Leave your world behind and go have some fun. Whether you want to go on a cruise or explore the lands on an escorted tour, we are here to help. You're never more than a click or call away. Book your vacay with Faye. Call 1-800-783-7047 and get away today. Phaseway Travel, an independent affiliate of Avoya Travel, a partner of American Express. Is your relationship built on fate, karma, or both? Is it meant to last? Will you stay together forever or search forever for your true soulmate? There are answers. And with Dr. Carmen Hara's new 3-lesson online seminar with Hay House Radio, Meant to Be, Understanding the Dynamic of Fate and Free Will in Relationships, you can finally get the answers you need. Listeners of this show get a 50% discount on attending online live with Carmen Hara, July 16th, 23rd, and 30th. Can't join Carmen live on those dates? You can listen to the entire course on demand with unlimited downloads after each session. Each one of our relationships serves a unique purpose.
Now, live with Carmen Hara, you'll get the answers to the questions you have. Dr. Carmen Hara's new 3-lesson online seminar with Hay House Radio. Sign up today with your 50% discount from Positively Incorrect Radio. Go to CarmenHara.com or send Carmen an email at CarmenHara@AOL.com. You're listening to Positively Incorrect with your host Scott Cluthie on Blog Talk Radio. The call-in line is 347-308-8478. And now back to Scott Cluthie and Positively Incorrect. Background, my wonderful guest this evening, it is Harville Hendricks and Helen LaKelly Hunt. Hello, Helen. Welcome back.
Hi there.
Hi. We're back.
Harville, great to have you. Their book, new book, Making Marriage Simple, 10 Truths for Changing the Relationship You Have into the One You Want. There's a website, makingmarriagesimple.com. Did I get that right, Helen?
That's right.
Good. What are some of the great things we'll find at that website, by the way?
Well, one thing is a point that, yes, we try to make marriage simple, but we didn't say it was easy. There really is daily practice you have to do, and one of the things you learn about in following us more is the idea, a recommendation to put up a calendar at your medicine cabinet, and every day decide if your relationship was negativity-free, and if so, you get a smiley face, and you actually track if either of you has any negativity, you put a frowny face, and that idea is what turned our marriage around.
Really?
We literally put up a month's calendar and would track every day. Could we succeed at having a day without negativity? It was hard to do, but that specific practice was the one thing we attribute to saving our marriage.
Yep.
Powerful stuff. You know, Harville, I think it was last week, in fact, I was reading a report that came out that 40% of the households in America now, women are the main bread earners, if you will. Is there something significant in that besides the sea change in our culture and our society, which I believe is welcome, because I love the idea that each partner can do what they can do, and that's what they do without using a dominant, submissive role about I make the money, therefore you must, or whatever.
Yeah.
But what does that tell us, Harville and Helen, about where we are in our culture and where we might be headed?
Well, it's clearly the case that the economic resources in families is being more equally shared, and that there's an economic a real shift in terms of who the wage earner is, and some increased economic equity so that women are less dependent, as you said, on the man because they are now a part of the resources that make the family work.
Yeah.
So it really invites more partnership. Instead of division of labor, that men did this and women did this, just your social role was determined by your gender. In fact, there is now men have the choice of spending more time at home with the kids if that's their aptitude. Women who have aptitude that might be more work in the world outside the home, they're
sure.
free to express themselves. So what's needed is shared responsibility, shared planning, co-created lives, and to work in partnership, you need to learn what you've been saying this whole last 30 minutes, how to be in relationship, how to be in partnership.
You know, it should never be that way, but it often is that way, and it's also maybe a human trait that the one with more money tends to feel that they should be in charge of what's happening. What's the fallacy and the danger in that, if there is?
Well, that creates what we were talking about, the marriage that's dying, and that the divorce is the symptom of that death. That creates a vertical marriage in which power and decision-making are assumed to be arrogated by, you know, one of the persons, and that's the one who presumes to have the power. So this is this, you know, was a functional marriage for probably 200 years around the current marriage, which came into being in the 17th century. And prior to that, for the last 10,000 years, you know, women were subordinate in the family, and, you know, about the women's movement was necessary.
Sure.
Women were not even citizens until 1920. So when this inequity is there, it's the basis for A, abuse on the one hand, and it's also the basis of devaluing of the partner who is does not have the money, and therefore is the basis for the kind of conflict that erodes marriages.
It seems to be the basis of some of the biggest divisions in creating divorce, and also, of course, some of the ugliest things you read about, thank God I've never experienced, in the newspaper. Helen, you were adding?
Yeah, I just wanted, your question, such an interesting one, and I wanted to ask this question. Should money be such a determinant of who has power?
I mean, of course
not. When you ask that question, no one has asked us that question before, and I was thinking that we really do have a culture mm-hmm. that is so commercialized and so focused on making money, that people will sacrifice family relationships or their own health in order to get ahead at work and make sure that winner takes all or whatever. You know, if there's a real pressure to make sure you're succeeding at work. And I think Harville and I, well, I'm married to someone, it's really Harville's vision, and I'm a follower of his vision, but he really has visioned, can we have a civilization based on love? You know, can we have a culture where the first thing you think about is caring for your relationship, and then second are the other things in life? And it's a beautiful vision. I am just 100% behind him, and I want to spread that idea that we do need a relationship revolution in our society, and we need a society that will put relationships first, because that's where the reward is. As we all know, having a lot of money is not the be-all and end-all. What we really want is to be surrounded by loving family.
Right, but I'm just addressing the fact that there are many people who operate that way, and that's part of their lizard brain going off. And it's also a hard thing to overcome, because so many times it comes as most of the major problems in our relationships do seem to emanate from our upbringing when we're kids, the programming we took within ourselves, the withhold or the over, you know. In fact, both of you expressed that in the book about Harville. You had a kind of tough road there. And, Helen, you had an interesting tough road because you had everything. But you were also subjugated to being the cursing Southern Belle.
Right.
That's a tough road to come out to.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things that's important in the work you share is that, and I agree, that 90% of the time you're arguing about something that really doesn't have anything to do with the person standing in front of you. They're just doing a great job of recreating it for you.
Right.
That's true. In fact, that's a really interesting thing for couples to become aware of, and for us to be aware of, is that couples come in blaming each other for a lot of stuff that simply that their behavior is triggering memories that they had of their relationship with their parents in childhood, of patterns that were there that were painful that are being triggered by the relationship. So we actually find that couples feel a bit liberated when we say, you know, what's going on here is the intrusion of your childhood into your marriage. So what we have to do is figure out how can you two respond to each other in such a way that you don't trigger each other's childhood. And if you do that, probably only about 10% of your relationship needs to be worked on, because 90% of it has to do with not knowing that you're fighting battles that have their roots in your childhood.
The tilted windmills of our life. Helen, I want to talk about the great, great sex of being married. You know, this is a shocking information that you share for a lot of people, probably, because the assumption is,
okay, we're married now. No more good sex for me.
But it's actually just the opposite, isn't it?
Well,
I mean,
we really think of intercourse in so many different ways. There is our bodies doing it, but our words and our visions. I mean, there's a lot of way to have sex. And
you can see that on TV every night. I'm just kidding.
In our case, I mean, Harville and I love our sex life, and you know that's really important to us, and it's great. But it's, you know, some couples really, you know, the important thing is to be passionate about each other.
Of course.
So that's what we would put the focus on. Passionate in dreaming dreams, passionate in the fact that if one is hurting, the other is there for them, and that sense of feeling like they have one real, real, real friend in the world, passionate around help with family, passionate about dreams coming true. So,
yeah, one of the things
which also makes great sex with your partner. Just ask
it does.
Yes.
It does.
You kind of have to have it all goes hand in hand, and there's nothing wrong with a fantastic sex life when you're married.
Not at all. In fact, the fantastic sex life is probably when you're married, because
mm-hmm.
the sex then is more than physical.
Yeah.
It becomes
free and open, and it's giving it because you care and you want to.
It's just a part of it. We say often we make love all the time and sometimes have sex.
Right on. Right on. So what about today? Are you getting younger couples into your work? And, I mean, what's your take on younger generations? Are they learning anything from our stupidity?
Well, I do think many are intrigued with the knowledge that's come out in the relationship sciences that's really been improving in this decade.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that has to do with advancement in our understanding of the brain, and they're really interested in that. Harville and I think the real issue, though, is that the culture needs to take relationship science to the younger people in the form of when a couple is considering getting a marriage license, it ought to be like a car license. You ought to take a course, read a book, and pass a test, and then you get your license. There's a skill set that helps marriage move on an easier path for everyone. If they know that the power struggle is inevitable, if they know that there's a way to dialogue, where if they know to take turns talking, they can navigate the power struggle better. But it needs to be taught before people get married. And we even think relationship science ought to be taught in school, that there should be four R's: reading, writing, arithmetic, and relationship. So we think the culture needs to take this to the young people.
Well, I think they ought to keep a band and track in there too, though, but that's just me. I think it's one of the big failings of our so-called educational system is not educating the whole person. Now, Harville, let's talk about that. You were going to say something? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just agreeing with you that the arts and as well as the sciences need to be kept into education. But what Helen is saying is there's a fourth R called relationship, which has never been introduced into education, and that needs to go in so that people actually start off with learning how to be with other people. And there's simply no systematic information in the culture about that.
I think you need to go petition Rick Perry down in Texas.
Well, I'm going to go. We're on our way.
Right.
Yes,
just call him up and say, Ricky, can I learn you something?
Can I learn you something? Yeah.
Well, here's $100,000. Now will you listen to me? Another story. Let's talk about the great exercises in the book, because you've put a lot of the work, the imago therapy and the refinement of it over the decades, really, in the book. That's the 10 truths. I mean, you have a process here, and Helen, you keep referring to it. The book is a working book. It's not just a talk and think book. It's
right.
a process book, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. What Helen is responsible for the idea of this book and also took the lead on producing it. In fact, without Helen, Imago would not have come into being because she's indispensable. It arose out of a conversation with us starting in 1977. And her idea was that making marriage simple would be exactly that. It would remove the more heady theoretical pieces from getting the love you, which were in Getting the Love You Want. In fact, the only theory in this Making Marriage Simple are the titles of the chapters. They're all theoretical, like conflict is growth trying to happen. Incompatibility is the grounds for marriage. That's a whole piece of theory. But what the attempt and what the attempt was to make this book available to anybody who reads, or even people who not necessarily devoted readers, and to them we put in the cartoons so that the characters,
people like me could get it. That's right.
people like you could get it. The characters on each page carry basically the essence of the meaning on that page, and then we put in the back of the chapters. The exercises that are the core exercises that we know will help people work through their conflict, help them learn how to talk to each other, keep the relationship safe. And yes, so the attempt was to make it a really working book, not just a cognitive intellectual book.
What about the, and this is a pattern you see, it's usually reflected in the headlines of people who have some kind of standing out in the community, whether it's entertainment, whatever it is, Helen, that these 20-year marriages and suddenly they just gone. What do you chalk that up to? What's going on there in your opinion?
Well, isn't that poignant, especially when the kids are caught off guard?
Yeah.
It's different things. In some cases, people are on parallel or are living parallel lives. They're being cordial to each other. They have their kids. They have passion in the world, but coming home, they don't really take time to cultivate that relationship, which has been your theme throughout this hour together, that there's a relationship to cultivate. So they're used to coexisting. And one day, one of them, there's a passion they feel out in the world, maybe with somebody else. Suddenly they're in love with someone else. So they haven't invested it in their partner at home, so they just exit. And in other cases, there are hot marriages, and people are in so much conflict, and it is so wearing that that's when they divorce. But even though in the world they look like an intact marriage, but at home they're really fighting and they decide to just, it's intolerable. So it's different things. And what I think Harville and I wish we could put into the culture is that there is help for your marriage. If you have a struggle, there is help. The field has really improved in the last 15 years. Marriage therapy used to be pretty dull and boring about 20 years ago. And with the breakthrough in several disciplines, psychology's gotten stronger. People have begun to put spirituality into psychology, the neurosciences, as I said a few minutes ago. We have really good marriage therapy, and we want to get it out into the world as marriage education. Only 5% of the public goes for therapy. So we really feel like we want to get it into the public that there is help for your marriage if you're struggling. So go to the website, contact your civic center or your place of worship, get help, because just like you have a spa for your body now and then, you need it twice a year to go away on the spa for your relationship.
And you can also go out and get engaged in the work of Harville Hendricks and Helen LaKelly Hunt through makingmarriagesimple.com. You can find out how you can attend in person, which would be quite a joy, or get the book and work with it, or find a group or a group of couples, which is always an exciting and challenging thing, and work on it together. Now, Harville, in the book, you indicate all the positives of a healthy, strong marriage, and there are many ramifications in many areas of life, aren't there?
Yes, they are. And we think that the positives, to sort of summarize the book, the positive words about what a great marriage is that, first of all, it's safe. A great marriage is safe, and that means that when you're safe, then you can experience being connected, which is what everybody's dream is to be connected. And then when you're connected, you feel joyful and alive.
Yeah.
That is a great marriage, and that the that marriage can't happen if there's negativity in the relationship. So we are positing and encouraging couples to take a zero negativity pledge. We do that in workshops. We're training our therapists to help their couples in Imago therapy do that. Take a zero negativity pledge. And as we began to work with couples around this, it suddenly dawned on us that zero negativity would be a wonderful thing in every human ecosystem, schools, businesses, churches, governments, and so forth, because we think that negativity is probably the universal human disease, and that zero negativity is actually the human dream. And this book, Making Marriage Simple, is both a book for couples to read and work on their marriage, but it's also a kind of wedge that we're going to use in preparing. We're already developing the infrastructure to prepare a global movement, at least a global campaign, whether it becomes a movement or not, a campaign for zero negativity.
Very good. You know, they say that love and fear, in this case love and negativity, can't exist in the same time, in the same space. So it's
exactly.
You make a choice. And the other thing is, one of the themes that I've gained over the years is that you wake up in the morning, and that day you commit to the relationship.
Yes, every day.
Right? Talk about
every day. Yeah. You commit every day. Helen and I have a pattern of every evening as well, is that we share with each other three appreciations for something each of us did that day, not just in general, but that day,
mm-hmm.
which keeps us focused on each other. We have to sort of pay attention to be able to have something to say in the evening, which is a way of staying engaged, staying connected, staying positive. But each morning is a commitment. Each night is a blessing.
And, you know, that's an appreciation society, which is so important. And also, Helen, I would submit that that also allows you to speak to your partner the things that might to them seem natural or easy or just a little something to whatever. And what that means to you, and to give them the opportunity to really let in the difference we make in the 360 degrees of a relationship.
Absolutely. The first thing it does for me is I know I need to pay attention to what he's doing right because I'm so good at paying attention to what he isn't doing. I got that skill set down in spades, I was having trouble thinking of three things I would appreciate every day.
Imagine that.
He's such an introvert that why, you know, he's just in his books all the time. Well, are there really three things I could appreciate? But yes, I began to notice. So my whole attitude toward him began to change when I began to sort of pay attention to what he was doing right. And then he is so touched when I point it out. And, it's just something like, you know, thank you for fixing my plug around the computer when I was having trouble with it. Or thank you the way you picked up the towels. You know, I had left mine and you picked mine up in the bathroom and thank you. And just the little things. And he loves that. Who wouldn't?
Yeah, who wouldn't? You know, it's like they say, you know, it's amazing when you change yourself, how the people around you change. It's really
wild. It's really amazing. Yeah.
Amazing. Magic.
There's a nice phrase called catch your partner doing something right.
Ah, yes. That's a beautiful thing. Well, I know you've got some, we only have about a minute and a half left, but I know you've got some appearances or opportunities or seminars in Imago for people. Where are you going to be? Where in the world are Helen and Harville?
Well, we're going in the answer to that is really systematically on the website. People can get a link to our schedule.
Okay.
But we'll be doing a big couples workshop in Lenox, Massachusetts, coming up in July. Then we do about four or five a year. Then we have one in Omega at Rhinebeck, New York, in September. Another one in December, and so forth. But it's all on the website. Our whole schedule.
MakingMarriageSimple.com. That's also the title of the book. Making Marriage Simple: 10 Truths for Changing the Relationship You Have into the One You Want. My wonderful guest this evening, it's Helen LaKelly Hunt and Harville Hendricks. And Helen and Harville, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules to share an hour here on Positively Incorrect Radio.
Well, thank you for being interested in having us. It was an honor and a pleasure.
Yes, a pleasure.
Helen, have a great evening with Harville and pull him out of his shell.
I will. And by the way, you're sort of adorable.
Thank you.
It's
one of my winning ways.
It is. It is. I notice.
Yeah, you're very intuitive. You too have a lovely evening, and thanks again for being with us, okay? Take care.
You have a great one, too, and thanks for having us. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody out there, for listening to Positively Incorrect. Your host, Scott Cluthie, be back again Tuesday with another live edition, 7 p.m. Central. Till then, take care, be kind.
You've been listening to Positively Incorrect with your host Scott Cluthie on Blog Talk Radio. All theme music provided courtesy of Mark May. Check out markmay.com. And thanks for listening to Positively Incorrect with your host Scott Cluthie on Blog Talk Radio.